three ball from CG43. They're in front.
This is flat out ridiculous.
From a beautiful left hand, in and out finish, the old fashioned way.
Newell gets to the basket with one to come. From there again. You have got to be kidding me. Tyson Stiff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. This is a FIBA World Cup preview episode. I've only got a few thoughts, and we're going to go through them. The World Cup starts, I want to say, Thursday in the afternoon. I'm recording this actually Thursday morning early, and the games are on later tonight. Australia play Finland at, I want to say, 4 p.m. Now, I don't know whether that's East Coast time or West Coast time, but nonetheless, that's what it is. And the good thing about this World Cup is it's being played throughout Asia, Japan and Philippines and a few other places. So the time zone will actually work quite well for Australia, so people can enjoy these games post-work in the evenings. But nonetheless, Joseph Kaur here. Andrew Canyon can't join us today. Our schedules just didn't allow it, and I thought, you know what, the World Cup's a big event. We should lay something down. And I've got my thoughts on it. What are we going to be talking about? Just looking at Australia's team, what I like, what I don't like, and this is stuff I've come up with having brief chats with Andrew and Adam and other listeners of the podcast and people who've sent some stuff to the Twitter account or on the Discord, and I've just sort of compiled it here and we'll have a look. But primarily what I'm interested with the World Cup is not just Australia's play and who they've got playing and whether they'll do well, but also looking at comparing it with the Matildas run and where basketball is sitting as a viewership program. We saw how well the Matildas went, so I'm going to be having a look at that as best I know it. But let's start at the top. Let's start with Australia's team. The big question going into this World Cup for me is, can Australia retain its number three world rank that it got after the Olympics in Tokyo when it won the bronze medal? And for me, the answer to that question, it comes down to another three questions. And the first two, the biggest two, are Patty Mills, Joe Ingles, and Landau. Can they retain their number three ranking with Patty Mills at his current state of play? Now, I don't put a lot of stock into the warm-up games where Mills shot really poorly. And I mean, you know, something like quite a lot of shots and sub 30%. He just couldn't put the ball in the hole. And a lot of that was because, yeah, he just didn't have his touch. But a lot of it was he was forcing up shots. So, you know, when you ask that question of can Australia retain its number three rank, the first question you ask is, well, can Patty Mills play at the level he did in Tokyo or even approaching it? And to recap, at those Olympics, Mills averaged 21 points per game, which I believe was the third best for the tournament, maybe higher. I didn't find that stat. He did it on 43% shooting, which was really good. And also, this is the kicker here, not just the scoring stats, but he did it while tallying the third highest tally of minutes in the tournament at 33 minutes of 40 per game. So he played 33 minutes of 40 in that tournament. It's a lot of minutes. Can he log those minutes? And a reminder, Mills is coming off an NBA season where he had more DNPCDs than he did GPs, more did not play coaches decisions than he did games played. I think he played 40 games with the Nets and had a lot of games and long stretches where he just didn't hit the floor. And in the previous podcast I recorded with Mark Worthington, he supposed as to why that was, and primarily defensively, which can be hidden better at a FIBA tournament. But the question still remains, you know, how, you know, at now 35, almost 36, what has Mills got? Has he got that FIBA Patty? We're going to find out. I don't have an answer to the question, but I'd like to pose it. And yeah, but looking at it, in the games he did play, the shooting splits were good. So there may have been a question about the defense, but the shooting is, it's so surprising to see it be so poor in these warm-up games because the shooting splits with the Nets were quite good. Did shoot very few free throws, but then shot very few at the FIBA World Cup, the Olympics last time as well, or not a great deal. So not getting to the rack. Moving on from that, can Australia keep their number three world ranking? Well, the next question comes down to Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles, if Patty Mills is coming off a bad season, I would argue that Joe Ingles is coming off a worse NBA season. A really tough year in the NBA. He had that knee injury, came back, played about half the season with the Milwaukee Bucks, had one good game in the playoffs, and then unfortunately was just invisible the rest of the time, and I just didn't see him have many good games. I didn't see him defend at the level he was accustomed to with the Jazz. Only 46 games played last year. That's the third lowest scoring amount of his career. And the shooting numbers and true shooting percentage were actually quite good, and that's the surprise of it. But when on the floor, so the metrics and the analytics tell us he was shooting quite well, but on the floor, looked, came in and out of games effectively and looked slow on the floor. And yeah, I just wasn't convinced. And I think I've actually heard these ideas echoed on the Bill Simmons podcast, how he thought that Joe Ingles had just taken a step back. But what's funny is for Joe Ingles is, was on a $6 million deal last year with the Bucks and signed a two-year, $11 million per year contract with the Orlando Magic. So they must think he's doubled as a player or close to, which is pretty peculiar. And then the third question as to whether Australia can retain its number three world ranking is Landau. Landau goes out with this ankle injury, I want to say sustained against South Sudan in a practice match. A huge out because he gave, capable scorer, good defender, good rebounder, all that sort of stuff. But he gave a great symmetry and balance to the roster, was a genuine big guy and could play it. Now Australia all of a sudden get a little bit, guys are a little bit more thrown out of position. They get a little bit smaller, a lot more Cooks, a lot more Reith. The starting lineup when they face Finland will be very interesting to see. So Landau's a huge loss. Now, that injury, could he be rushed back for the FIBA World Cup? I have no idea. I haven't seen the injury. I don't care to investigate. But I will say that with the Houston Rockets, he signed a four-year deal, but only that first year is guaranteed. So he has to have, it's more important to him to get that $8 million in the NBA, secure that first year, play well, and then get the subsequent 3 years thereafter, rather than playing in a tournament for, national glory. So they're the three. And here's I got a fourth question as to the answer of can Australia retain the number three world ranking. And the other one is Josh Giddey. Young player, he's playing in his first tournament, major tournament for Australia at, an Olympic and FIBA level. Did a couple of warm-ups with the Olympic team, but they don't count. And he's now coming into this World Cup and has really been given the total keys to run the team. And here's what I'll say about Giddey. And as people have listened to the podcast before, I think he's a fine player. I think he's a good player, but I think that he's been prematurely anointed as a superstar. And here's how I'll put it. Whenever Giddey does something either average or okay or good, it's wow. Josh Giddey got 15 points and 8 rebounds. And a reminder, he's only 20. And my thought would be, yeah, he's only 20. And he's going to be the starting point guard and trying to win you a gold, silver, or bronze medal at a FIBA World Cup, a tournament he's never been a part of. Really, really difficult ask. And you can say it as, he's only 20! Exclamation mark. Or you can be like, he's only 20, full stop. And that comes with its limitations. So, do we think he can lead a team to a third place finish at a tournament he's never been a part of? Really tough ask, and we're going to see if he can do it. If he can, it's miraculous. The smart bet would be that he probably does not, but we're going to see what happens. I will remind people, the last game of consequence, and this must eat at Giddey, but the last game of consequence he played was the second play-in game, I want to say, of the NBA, at Timberwolves. OKC lost that game 120-95. They got really blown out. And here is his stat line. 30 minutes, 6 points, 2 of 13 from the field. That's 15%. 4 assists, 1 turnover, and a massive loss. Tough pill to swallow. And then sit with all offseason. And it showed on his face. I think looking at, I only watched very briefly the warm-up games. But he had a murderous intent and got stuck into players and got testy with guys from, I want to say, Brazil or maybe elsewhere as well, Venezuela, when that game kind of got out of hand. So, he's got a monkey on his back. He's got a chip on his shoulder, and he's playing with it, and it was actually quite fun to see. So, that was in that game against Timberwolves. That was against Mike Conley, a guy who, a style of point guard, he's going to come up against in this tournament. And I can't name them by name, but, guys who are clever and savvy and know how to shift a player defensively. So he's going to have, he's jumping onto a moving treadmill and he's going to have to really be moving his puppies. The question I come off from that is, the viewers, and we saw a slight recurrence of that game against the Timberwolves against Brazil. Giddy just couldn't kind of break guys down off the dribble, would take three dribbles, be beaten to a spot, put his back into a guy and throw it back out. And it put Mills under a lot of pressure, and perhaps that's somewhat of the reason for his low percentages, but we're going to see more. And, you know, that was the thing. Giddy kind of seemed to struggle to beat guys off the dribble when going up against defensive dedication better than the NBA's first through third quarters, when seemingly, I watched a lot of games this year, not by choice, by paycheck. And they're tough watches. Quarters one through three, the effort level defensively is just not there. But that's the other thing. And then, yeah, I only thought I had three questions. It looks like I've got five on my rundown here as to whether Australia will keep its number three world ranking. And the question is, are we going to see Brian Gorgon's balls? Not literally, figuratively. We've already seen one of his balls in cutting Dellavedova. That's a really difficult thing to do. Strong player, you know, is older now and certainly was at a competitive spot with the likes of Giddy and Exum and, gosh, I want to say who else. Giddy, Exum, a couple others. So he's in that spot, and it just didn't make roster sense. Dyson Daniels. Didn't make sense to bring him along, and they cut him. And that's tough, and that's brutal. And the safe bet would have been we'll give him 12th man, and if we're struggling, we'll throw out a season point guard like him to play. Gorgon didn't do that. Gorgon's gone all in with the younger guys, and I think it's the right move, but it was a ballsy move. So we've seen one of his balls. The question we're going to see is, you know, what's going to happen if Mills and Ingles just don't, this form from the warm-up games is not an aberration, but the norm. Is he going to have the balls to sit them, move rosters, put in bigger guys? You know, Brian Gorgon's typically been a really good coach and done really well, and you don't get to that level without making really, really hard and decisions and sticking by it and being successful with those difficult decisions. So there for me, all the major questions to answering that one massive question of, you know, is Australia still the third best basketball country in the world? Looking at the betting, USA are very, very, very short favorites, you know, $1.13 or something. I think they have a really nice team of young guys who are all on sort of a good age bracket. They seem to enjoy playing with each other. Halliburton I like. Austin Reeves I really like. A lot of athleticism with Panchero and Anthony Edwards. So they're going to be really tough. Unbeatable? No, but very difficult. You look at the favorites going back down from there. You've got France, a favorite to, you know, not favorite to silver, but they're likely at silver. Canada next. Australia, Serbia, Spain in that order. And the odds kind of are pretty close. I mean, France are plus 850, Spain plus 1600, Australia plus 1000. That's the American odds system, but very short range between France, Canada, and Australia. So that's the way the betting's going. I won't go too much into that. Let's move on. Speaking about the World Cup more broadly as an event and a viewership thing, bit of a drag. This tournament is already beset with injuries, and I'll go through the list here. Ricky Rubio of Spain, out. Nikola Jokic of Serbia, out. Porzingis of Latvia, what's his first name? Kristaps. Kristaps Porzingis of Latvia, out. Rui Hachimura of Japan, out. Jock Landau of Australia, we mentioned him before, out. Giannis Antetokounmpo, you know, we're talking about the NBA's, you know, one of the guys, top three in the NBA, out. Domantas Sabonis of Lithuania, out. Jamal Murray of Canada just recently kind of got hurt or pulled out, one of the two, it doesn't matter. He's out. So, you know, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's 8 of arguably the best 10 or 15 players at this tournament, and they're out. And that's a drag. That, you know, the tournament, for me, and I think for the casual fan as well, has lost a bit of its luster. I wanted to see Jamal Murray for Canada very much. I wanted to, as a viewership product, I wanted to watch him. Porzingis I wanted to see as well. He's coming off a good NBA year. I wanted to see what he can do. Jokic, not so much. Saw him in the finals, but he's the best player in the world. I wanted to see him play. Hachimura, great playoffs. Looking forward to him. Antetokounmpo, of course. So, and, you know, Rubio's, he's still got it with that sort of classic Spanish team with Australia has historically come up against the last couple of times. So without them there, yeah, I won't lie. I think I speak for a lot of people. A bit of the polish has come off, but is what it is. Moving on, let's look at FIFA versus FIBA. So we had the FIFA World Cup, the women's anyway. Huge event. I think we all enjoyed it. Anyone who's a fan of basketball, I think, would cross over to that event. It was massive. People everywhere were watching it. What I find really interesting is, and I know this is about basketball, but I want to talk about the Matildas because it is relevant, because we're talking about two World Cup events hosted by essentially the same outfit or very similar in FIFA and FIBA. And for the Matildas, you know, it came down to 3 points. What made that the viewership, the successful viewership product that it was. And number one for me was, it was a big thumbs up for continuous sport and the easily understood nature of soccer. Soccer is, you know, you can't use your hands, kick the ball in the net, and it's very simple. And as far as continuous play goes, you know, it was 45 minutes in the first half, 45, bit of injury time, no ad breaks. And I think that for the casual fan or someone new to the sport, that was far more appetizing. Basketball's got an issue, and in particular, the NBL. I mean, I know we're talking about the World Cup, but I want to mention the NBL. When that whistle blows and really doesn't stop blowing, and there's so many stoppages and the free throws, there's so many chances for a viewer on TV to change the channel. And I think it's killing it as a viewership program. And the NBA's got the same problem, where it's just got so much stoppage and you're just seeing so little of the game, and games are taking a broadcast 3 hours. It's just an unenjoyable product, whereas the football just went so fast and so quick, and people could all enjoy it. And the ads were either product placement via logos on the ground or uniforms and during the halftime breaks. And I think that's a better way to do it. Number two on the FIFA World Cup is, I want to say, people like cheering for something new. There was an underdog element to the Matildas, not because they weren't favored to win the World Cup, but also because it was women's. I think people wanted to throw their weight behind a women's tournament and say, hey, this is new. I know there's nothing new about women's sport. It's been around forever. It just hasn't been, sadly, and to the nation's kind of shame, really, it hasn't been taken seriously. Only in the last 20, 30 years has it been taken seriously, and especially in the last 5 to 10. And people loved picking up something underdogish and cheering for it, and they also enjoyed cheering for place. And I think it's a real, I mean, I know it's a major tournament, so maybe it doesn't work, but the idea that because the World Cup was so successful, now the Women's A-League is going to be popular, I don't see that quantum leap. Cheering for Australia is one thing, cheering for Melbourne City, I don't see the actual correlation. And it's funny because, you know, the idea of cheering for stars, which is so, and personalities and people, which is so taken over the NBA, whereby, you know, you can be a LeBron fan, and whether he plays in Los Angeles or Cleveland or Miami, you follow him as a player. I actually think that model's kind of perhaps been shown to be a little bit of a fallacy, where people enjoy cheering for their place, their city, their team, their, I hate to say it, but their tribe people. So we saw that cemented there, and I think, you know, that idea of having superstars that you cheer for is really just a concoction of former NBA Commissioner Stern, and well, he's long dead. Good luck to him, or bless his soul. He's long dead, and, you know, maybe that theory that he created, it's time to see that shift as well. Just a thought. Third thing was, and I want to speak delicately here, but it was a pro referendum on same-sex relationships, and I want to refer people to a really good episode of Frontline, a wonderful TV show by Working Dog starring Rob Sitch, season 1, episode 10 of Frontline, called Add Sex and Stir. And what that was about was how, and it was a fictitious show, sort of pretending to be a current affairs show, and they had a story about sports, and it was about how a women's team was going to the Olympics, an Australian team was going to the Olympics, but instead of focusing on the team going to the Olympics, they focused on someone who had been cut from the team, who was claiming something about, because she wasn't a lesbian, she got cut from the team, when in reality she was cut from the team because she was just bad. And it was about how the media, you know, does this thing where, you know, that was the big story. It didn't give the sport and the competitors credibility. It gave this flim-flammy story. And we just saw, you know, it was really great to see how commonplace and celebrated it was, seeing conversations about, oh, you know, that's that player and her girlfriend is, you know, playing on Sweden or USA. And you just wouldn't have seen that. Maybe you would have seen it 10 years ago, probably not 20 years ago, but certainly not 30 years ago. It just wouldn't have been the same conversation. media took this event seriously. And also, they took it seriously because we were the host nation, along with New Zealand. They took it seriously for that reason, but I think they just took it seriously on its absolute merits, and it was great to see. And it paid dividends, 12 million viewership of the semi-final that Australia lost to England. And it's going to be unfair for the Men's World Cup coming up in the coming days and weeks, comparing the two tournaments. But it's going to happen. It's definitely going to happen, comparing the viewership of the FIBA to the FIFA, the FIBA men's and the FIBA women's. As I said before, the big thing is Australia's not the host. There's not the buzz on the street because it's been played in Japan and Philippines and so forth. But still, they're going to be referred to one another. And I think a lot of people are going to be looking at it as a slight referendum of Australian basketball versus soccer or football. What's more common? What's better? What do more people want? What do they cheer for? And because there is this kind of split with, you know, A-League and NBL play at the same time of year. They're both this sort of second tier sport to the AFL and NRL and cricket. You know, which is that, who's the runt of the litter out of the two? And right now, it certainly seems as though, although the A-League performed incredibly poorly on Channel 10, that maybe that sway after this is heading towards football, soccer, and its infrastructure and the money and the in vogue nature of it pushes money away from basketball. We shall see. The point I want to make as well, and this is what I'll be gauging more than anything at the FIBA World Cup and with the women's, is with the Women's World Cup, you just saw, I don't know if everyone else out there had the same thing, but there was so much fan-generated media on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, so on and so forth, particularly on TikTok, people making, you know, memes about the Matildas. And it was everything from their play to them as people. It was a lot. And that's key, I think, in a digital world of 2023 and beyond, is, you know, is your sport picking up, and are you getting fans generating the own content? You know, you don't have to pay people to do that. The sport and the fixture and the players have such resonance that people are making stuff. And we're going to see this FIBA World Cup, but I don't think that the proportions will be even close. I just don't. Unfortunately, I don't think the Boomers team... The Matildas players were charming, wholesome, likable, and seemingly approachable. And they gave many kind of fun interviews and things, and they had dimension. I hate to say it, but unfortunately, I don't think the Boomers team are like that. They're, to me, and, you know, I have had some access to press conferences, but not a lot and things, and I don't court it anymore. I don't really... But they seem to me quite guarded and suspicious. And I just don't think the Australian men's basketball team have the same sense of humour as the Matildas. And I don't mean that the Matildas were... I don't mean sense of humour in the sense of ha-ha funny. They just don't have that... I don't want to say likability. That's probably too harsh. But they just don't have that same... I don't think people are going to be as drawn to them. And I don't think they're going to endear themselves as well to people in the same way that those Matildas done. And there's no reason why they shouldn't. But it's just, but we shall see. And maybe I'm wrong, but I'll be watching that viewership data extremely closely. Moving on to the last thing, a couple of last things, is speaking of viewership data, you know, I'm going to be looking at the FIBA World Cup, going to be looking at the FIBA, but speaking of viewership data, in July of 2023, and this is something that hasn't had a lot of publicity, in July of 2023, ESPN very quietly re-upped its commitment to Foxtel and Kayo. Now, this is not so much a question about the World Cup, but more the NBL season coming up, but it does have a bit of crossover with the World Cup. Now, normally when these rights deals are announced, they're a big deal, and they're a lot of fanfare and ticker tape and party poppers and, whoa, this is fun. This deal went very much under the radar in, I want to say, the early part of July of this year, only a couple of months ago. And not only was there a very little fanfare, normally these things are celebrated, but also the length of the deal was kept secret and said to be in confidence, which is normally never the case. The implication, or at least I think what a lot of people would infer from that, is that the number of years that they've recommitted for is low. And the rumor was 2 years, which is really not a lot, considering that, you know, this first year is essentially... buys you this season, and then you can kind of get out of the second year of it. So That's, you know, there's a sigh of relief for Foxtel and KO, but you're still looking over your shoulder because you're like, ooh, what's going to happen at the end of just next season? You know, 2 years comes and goes like that. So, really interesting. And don't forget that, and do remember that the NBL signed a $45 million 3-year deal with ESPN and Foxtel, News Corp and etc. in 2021. So that's set to expire, you know, at the end of the season. I don't quite know how the calendar works out, but thereabouts. What's going to happen? You know, is the NBL going to go with ESPN and go to potentially its standalone streaming service if it was to break away? Does it go to Foxtel and hemorrhage its relationship with ESPN and thus the NBA? The NBL all of a sudden finds itself in a very, very strange, difficult, peculiar position where, you know, where does it brand itself? And I think ESPN's done quite a good job of like branding itself as the home of hoops. Actually quite like that moniker. And all of a sudden, if ESPN breaks away, where does the NBL attach itself? Really big question going forward. I don't think anyone's talking about it, but that's neither here nor there. It's looking like ESPN as a company, US ESPN, is looking to keep its options open. They've done a number of moves that have maintained their flexibility, this being one of them. There's a big article the other day, a couple of quotes, mostly from just aggregators who picked up a couple of quotes and repopulated it. But nonetheless, you can certainly see that Disney and Bob Iger, I mean, they've hemorrhaged 7,000 workers 2 months ago. It's clear that ESPN are on the move. They're doing something. And when I say ESPN, I actually mean their parent company in Disney, and that's Bob Iger. So they're looking to, yeah, maintain flexibility, maybe even look to sell it off. That's been the long-time rumor that they would do. The rumor is ESPN, as far as in its Disney, there's never been a huge, strong amalgamation or partnership between what Disney's trying to accomplish and what ESPN has typically or historically always done. So the question is, you know, does ESPN make business sense in the stable of content of Disney? And the rumor is that they're going to sell to Apple. Disney is going to sell off ESPN to Apple, and it's going to be on that streaming service for a sale of anywhere from $25 to $50 billion, because Apple are very keen to get into live events and sports, and they do that via ESPN. I don't know. I've just read a couple of lousy articles, but certainly ESPN seem to be doing a lot of chopping and a lot of changing. I'm almost out of here. I've got really two or three more things I'm going to talk about, and then I'll let you get on with your day. But I wanted to say Mad Rise was a documentary by Chris Appleby. I hope I've got that right. It was on Channel 9. It featured after some of the practice games of the World Cup. Really good. Great little documentary on the NBL and Australian basketball and its rise to the Olympics and imports of the 80s and 90s. And I thought it was really stylish and really cool. And you know, we've seen docs like this in the past, but I just thought it did it really well and highlighted, you know, stuff that was really important. So that was really good. And of course, Rose Gold by Matthew Attic Ponyer is playing in theaters around the country. I want to say this week and maybe this month. I hope people get out to it and it has a longer shelf life in the theaters and does really well, of course. And think about this: if you're on the fence about going to see Rose Gold, you think, oh, I'll catch it on streaming or whatever, I would suggest you go to it in the theater. And here's why. And you know, at any chance you can to consume that film, I would. And the reason why is, when are you going to see a filmmaker with the talent of Matthew Attic Ponyer, who just quietly has done the podcast in the past? I'll put the link to that episode in the show notes. When are you going to see a guy of that talent who is also the brother-in-law of Aaron Baines? So you're never going to see that level of talent with that level of connection. You're never going to see access like that granted to anyone ever again. You're just never going to see it unless a similar situation comes up. So you've got a great talent as well as, you know, family connection to the Boomers. That level of access you won't see. So I'm very interested in the doc. I haven't seen it yet. I'm hoping, and you know, if I made this thing, where I'd start the doc is I'd come up, fade from black, and I'd have the doc start at the moment when the Boomers lost their soul, which was when in the 2014 World Cup, when they took that dive against Angola. They obviously disputed it, but I think we can all look back on it now and say, yeah, they purposely lost 91-84 to Angola in 2014. You know, when you give up open layups in the final couple of minutes to make sure of it so you can avoid the USA in the next round, I don't think Angola have come within 20 points of Australia any time before or after, but they managed to get up that day and had plenty of, and you know, you had Brock Modem taking three-pointers from court to court. And so I'd have that moment, break him down. That's where I'd start the doc and then come up with, you know, that team that kind of shed that, you know, that bad decision, really bad decision, and then came on to sort of galvanize itself, even with the same coach, Lamanis, and kind of change its trajectory for the better. So that's what I'd hope to see. But, you know, Adik Ponyo is very talented, and I'm sure he'll take it in whatever direction he deems fit, and it'll be good. And if you're out there, definitely go and take your money and buy a ticket and go and see it. Everyone, that's it. Very short episode about the World Cup. I'll be watching with a degree of interest. You know, there was talk of Chris Golding getting cut. He's really the only remaining NBL talent in the team. I don't think he was ever going to get cut. They need his shooting and scoring and experience too much. But yeah, it's funny to say that, you know, this could have been the first World Cup team without any NBL talent in it since the NBL's construction, or whatever you want to call it, in 1979. So interesting times. Enjoy the World Cup, everyone. And yeah, if you enjoyed the show, become a patron. If you're on Twitter, is it still called Twitter? I don't even know anymore. But if you're on that platform or Threads, NBL Pocket Pass podcast is on Threads now. I very seldom say anything on there. I still use Twitter or X. So from there, if you're not, join the Discord. All those links are in the description, and I hope to speak to you soon. Bye.